Hey everybody, it's Podsman Josh here, coming to you on This Week in 1920s Baseball. Joining me is Matt. Hey Matthew.
Hey Josh, how you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing all right. We're getting the hang of this remote recording rather than being together in the studio. We're of course separate, but we're nonetheless bringing you episode 6.
Episode 6 here on this rainy day with us missing baseball. Yep.
Yep, stuck at home. But enjoying our look back at the 1920 season. We're going to start this episode off not with a reading of a article from the time, but with a list of corrections and updates from episode 5, because our fact checkers were busy and they were like, you guys made a lot of mistakes, Matt, in episode 5.
Yeah, a lot of mistakes. We apologize.
Hey, we're still learning. I mean, yeah. We're going into this as baseball aficionados and baseball history, you know, casually, or, you know, more than casual, but not, we're not experts, and we're certainly not experts in the 1920 season minutia yet. I mean, we're getting there.
Yeah, we're trying. You know, we're baby steps, right? Baby Ruth steps. Yeah.
So here's a couple of things that I got wrong on the last episode. I mentioned, and these are things no one would know. I mean, these are some roster details of not. You know, famous headlines, but small things that I mentioned and I want to set right. So I mentioned that the brothers Mack Wheat and Zach Wheat were teammates in Brooklyn, but that was actually the 1919 roster I was looking at. Mack Wheat got traded actually to the Phillies. So they broke up the brothers. Zach Wheat still with the Robins, which was the Brooklyn team, and Mack joined the Phils. So just to be clear, the brothers Wheat are now on rival teams, no longer teammates. And then I was going over the Reds roster, and I was talking about Jake Daubert, who is like now officially the guy we've talked about the most of anybody. He was the winner of the 1913 Chalmers Award / MVP Award for Brooklyn. And in 1920, he was with the Reds, and I mentioned that he was a reserve outfielder. But that was doubly wrong, because he was not an outfielder. He was a first baseman. And he was not a reserve. He was a starter. And he was really good. So I don't know what I was looking at. Something later in his career, I guess. Because as of 1920, Jake Daubert was still a very good player, still a regular everyday player, and a first baseman for the very good Reds team. So no disrespect intended to our friend Jake Daubert of Sheboygan, Pennsylvania. Still very productive in Cincinnati, off to the races, having a good year here in 1920 for the Reds. So the other thing, not really an error, but I mentioned John McGraw, the manager of the Giants, also known as
the McGrawman.
The McGrawman, of course. And I mentioned that he was a pretty good player. And to be honest, when I said it, I was like, is that right? I was like, that's right. Because it's so easy to remember him. He was such an iconic manager. You always see pictures of him like in a suit. Like he was very, he was old. Like he managed for a long time. So it's easy to imagine him as an old man, as a manager. And I mentioned, yeah, I think he was a good player. I looked it up a little bit. Man, was that an understatement. He was a phenomenal player. I mean, If you ever look at the top five single seasons for OBP, Barry Bonds, Ted Williams, and then before Babe Ruth is John McGraw. So he had an on-base percentage, this is going back to 1889, of .547, which is a ridiculous on-base percentage. And his career on-base percentage was .466, which is third all-time, only behind Williams and Ruth. So, you know, people got on base a ton back then, and we're talking the late 1800s, totally small ball before even the game started to change. But still, you know, the historians looked at, they compare you to your league average, not just to overall. And he was still, his league average, the average of his career, his on-base percentage was over 100 points higher than league average. So what I'm trying to say is John McGraw was not just a pretty good player in his own right, but a phenomenal player. In the small ball, dead ball era, long before he became the manager of the McGraw Men. So, you know, got to give the props to John McGraw. Didn't want to underplay what a fabulous player he was before he became a, you know, grizzled old manager. He could really swing the stick.
Well, excellent points, Josh. So, yeah, I had a few errors as well, at least the ones that we noticed. You know, if there's any others, please feel free to let us know, point them out.
Well, they'll tell us. The listeners will tell us.
So last episode, when I was talking about the Yankees' first game and, of course, Babe Ruth's debut with the New York Yankees, I had mentioned correctly that Ruth had made a fielding gaffe in the outfield, possibly, you know, costing the Yankees the game in the eighth inning. However, what I did say, which was incorrect, was that Ruth had an offer. Actually, Ruth did actually go 2-for-4 that day, having two hits. And actually, I think Josh, we'll mention later, did start off pretty well with the stick. Wally Pipp actually homered for the Yankees, only run. Just wanted to mention that. But again, sorry about the incorrect information about Ruth's debut as a hitter.
The memorable thing is that he blew it.
Yeah, that the headline was his fielding error in right field. So we'll keep an eye on Ruth's exploits throughout the year, of course, because he is our biggest star. And then I just wanted to correct. I stumbled over Bill Wamsgans' name. It's so simple, but you know, when you look at it, there's just so many S's. So
it is not simple.
I apologize to Indians fans, the second baseman, Bill Wamsgans. I apologize. So
we should say though, it's spelled Wamsgans and pronounced Wamsgans. So no one's faulting you. No one's faulting you for saying that one wrong. That is a bizarre name. It's fun to say though, Wamsgans.
Now, and Wamsgans will probably come up later in the season, so look forward to that. But now we have his pronunciation down.
Yeah. Now we're going to work it into conversation all the time.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's it for the corrections for me.
All right. And then besides that, I'm ready to look at the on-field action. I don't know about you, but I feel like we're all really missing baseball. So rather than looking at the rule changes, which we said we were maybe going to cover, or some of the other stuff, let's just go through the on-field action. Like I mentioned earlier, we've been using a lot of the library's databases, Pennsylvania Historical Newspaper Archives that are available through the library site. But also, I've just been enjoying using Baseball Reference, .com. You know, shout out to BBRef. There's so much stuff on there that, you know, you can go through game by game, day by day, player by player, year by year, slice it, dice it any way you want. So I've just been going through the first week or so of the season and looking at some of the interesting games. Do you want to set the stage a little bit for
Yeah, I was just going to, you know, some of the names that maybe we both recognize here from the 16-day opening day lineups. So I'll just start in alphabetical order with the American League. Of course, and again, I think Josh is going to cover them a little bit more. So I'll just quickly briefly mention with Boston, we have Harry Hooper. We have McNally with the White Sox. We have, of course, a lot of the team from the 1919 Black Sox that you'll remember. So we have Joe Jackson, Eddie Collins, Buck Weaver, as well as others. Again, with Cleveland, we have our second baseman, Wamsgans.
Yeah.
To the speaker. And then our pitcher, Stan Kovaleski. The Tigers, of course, have Ty Cobb and Harry Heilman. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that one right. The Yankees have, of course, Wally Pipp at first, and somebody we'll talk about a little bit later at third, Bob Musial. And then, of course, Babe Ruth in actually center field. So, again, we need to make another correction about that. The Athletics.
Center, huh? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so the Athletics have Joe Dugan. That's another familiar name. And the Browns have, of course, George Sisler, very famous for having the all-time hits record in a season for many years. The Senators, of course, have the big unit. Or sorry, he wasn't the big unit.
He was the big train.
The big train, that's right. Walter Johnson, of course, he was, you know, arguably, possibly the greatest right-handed pitcher in Major League history.
He was up there.
Yeah, they have Sam Rice in center, Bucky Harris at second. The Dodgers have not a lot of players that I actually know, Chuck Ward, Zach Wheat, which we mentioned, but as you'll see, they're actually going to be doing pretty good here the first week.
I think so.
Yeah, and let me see. So BSN, I think, is Boston National. That's the Braves. They have Rabbit Marinville, famous shortstop in the Hall of Fame. The Cubs have, of course, Pete Alexander, as he was known. And again, we'll talk about him in a little bit. Of course, his given name was Grover Cleveland Alexander, one of the all-time greats. Cincinnati, as we mentioned, power-hitting first baseman Jake Daubert. And they also have Ed Rusch in, again, I might be mispronouncing that, in center. The Giants have Frankie Frisch at third, as well as Casey. I'm sorry, no, that's the wrong team. Again, we'll go right to the Phillies then. We have Casey Stengel in right field, and Irish Musial in left, and Mac, who we've talked about. See, the Weeds are getting a lot of love.
Yeah, they really are.
And he's our catcher. And then we have, unfortunately, so Babe Adams, who I've heard of from the Pittsburgh Pirates, pitching. And then lastly, but not least, we have the Cardinals, who with one of the all-time greats at second base, Rogers Hornsby. So, yeah, that's just a quick rundown of the opening day. And, you know, you can look that up as well on Baseball Reference if you want to get an idea of the opening day lineups for everybody. So
yeah, that's good. It's interesting to see how many of those names do jump out at me. I haven't thought about Rabbit and Marinville yet. Hey, those are lots of good dudes to keep an eye on. Looking at opening day, I just happened to notice that the White Sox won in extra innings when Eddie Collins hit a walk-off against the Browns. I think you mentioned that last week. It was interesting to note that, you know, it was extra innings, but both pitchers went the distance. You complete games, even in extra innings. Lefty Williams got the win for the White Sox. Hooks Dawes got the loss, even though he pitched 10 and third innings. He ended up still getting an L. So just another example of the way the pitching was used differently back then. You mentioned Stan Kovaleski. I looked him up too. He's also from Sheboygan, Pennsylvania, which is ridiculous. He and Jake Daubert, both from good old Sheboygan, PA. I was super surprised to see that name even once, and then I saw it again. So something in the water there, breeding good ball players.
Where exactly is Sheboygan, Josh?
It's not far from here. It's like coal country, I think, just a little bit north and west of here. Nice. I got to double check. But yeah, it's in eastern Pennsylvania, coal country, PA, not too far. Yeah, maybe we'll make a trip. Maybe we'll go up there and
try to find Kovaleski's birthplace. Yeah.
Looking a little bit ahead to some of the games from the first week, I wanted to mention the Red Sox just because it caught my eye. The Red Sox started 5-0, 6-1 as of April 24th to start the year. So, you know, we haven't talked about the Sox much other than that they traded Babe Ruth. I mean, that's what their big offseason move was getting rid of the greatest player of all time and getting nothing in return. So, you know, they could not have necessarily been expecting to have a great season, but they did start out really hot. So, and I thought I would just look at them real quick. You did mention Harry Hooper, who is a Hall of Famer, I believe. Their first baseman was a guy named Stuffy McInnes, which is a good name. He was a good hitter. They had a guy named Tim Hendricks, who I'm not sure why he didn't play in 1919, but he was pretty good in 1920. And they had some great names for their pitching staff. Sad Sam Jones. I mean, his nickname is just Sad, like literally the word sad. Sad Sam Jones. But he was their ace. And then there was Bullet Joe Bush, which is like Bullet Joe, that's a good nickname. Herb Pennock, who is another local-ish boy. He's from Kennett Square, PA, down like towards Philly. So he was a Herb Pennock. He was a good pitcher. Had a long career with the Yankees then after he left the Sox. But he was one of the pitchers getting the Red Sox off to a good year in 1920. The only other team I wanted to mention, just speaking of names, I mean, everyone has great names. And I do feel like the pitchers in particular have like the best names. So I was looking at the Cubs pitching staff. The Cubs are pretty bad, so they're not going to feature in our pennant race conversation too much. But they did have some good pitching names. They had a guy named Hippo Vaughn, which I feel like I've heard before.
Yeah, I think he might be a Hall of Famer.
Hippo Vaughn was pretty good. Speed Martin. Sweetbread Bailey.
That's my favorite.
Sweetbread Bailey is pretty good. Chippy Gaw. First name Chippy, last name Gaw, G-A-W. Chippy Gaw.
Yeah, maybe that one's better. I don't know. Just, every name I feel like we read with these.
I know.
Better. Yeah.
And then Virgil Cheeves, which I just think sounds very British, maybe very proper. Virgil Cheeves. And then also I was looking at their roster, and as you mentioned, there was a guy named Pete Alexander. When I saw his name, I did not know that was Grover Cleveland Alexander. Pete Alexander. I was like, wow, this guy's really good. And then I was like, oh, yeah, that's one of the most famous pitchers in the history of baseball. He was dominant during the previous decade, and he was actually a really good pitcher on the Phillies. I looked him up. I knew I was familiar a little bit with his story, but I didn't realize exactly how dominant he was. And then he missed a year because of World War I. So he's one of those guys who had his prime interrupted by war, but then came back and really continued to put up a good long career.
Yeah, we had a long conversation about it. And I mentioned there was a Ronald Reagan biopic about him in the 1950s called, I think it was called The Winning Team, which kind of the penultimate scene is him striking out Tony Lazzari in the 1926 World Series Game 7, ninth inning.
I looked it up on his plaque, his Hall of Fame plaque. It says he struck out Lazzari with the bases loaded to something like end to solve the final crisis or something like that. It's worded really cool. There was a must have been a rally in the bottom of the ninth, the last, the home of the last of the World Series, and yeah, he got the win for the Cards. So that was a big event.
Yeah, I mean he's probably regarded as one of the greats, of all time, at least at least stat wise.
Set the record for most wins as a rookie pitcher. So he started out blazing. And he did not look back. So he's on a bad Cubs team this year with probably the worst name, but, pretty good arm. So worst name only compared to, Sweetbread and Chippy and Hippo.
Yeah, it looks like he's got 373 wins, which I think ties him with Christy Mathewson for third all time. I think I could be wrong. We'll have to check that. And of course, like you mentioned, he missed a year. He actually served in Europe in World War I and was injured by mustard gas and shell shock and actually suffered from epilepsy and then alcoholism. So yeah, interesting story. Again, if you're, if you want to watch an old movie as a treat, I think it's called The Winning Team with Ronald Reagan. It's not the most historically accurate, but it's a lot of fun. I think it's from the early 50s. So I digress.
That's a good story though. That's a cool, and that's an all-time great that we get to follow here in the 1920 season. So he was already deep into his career. Who were some of the guys just starting here this year in 1920? Who are some of our debuts?
So, Baseball Reference again, you can look up the debuts for the 1920 season. So what I did is I went and I looked for the first week and see if I fit on any notables with some good WAR. Top of the list is Bob Musial, the Yankees outfielder, though I think he's actually playing, I think we looked and he was playing third base. So he made his debut opening day. And then we have a pitcher that had a pretty good career, the name of Eddie Rommel for the Philadelphia Athletics. And then just one that I thought was a funny name, Slim Harris. Didn't really have a good debut. So as you notice, there's two Athletics. There's actually four more Athletics on that list. Connie Mack, the owner and manager of the Philadelphia Athletics, was famous for building a winning championship squad and then selling them off to make money and then rebuilding. So
this is rebuild time.
This looks like it might be a rebuilding year here for the Athletics.
Yeah, lots of guys with no experience.
One other name here for the Braves, I thought it was kind of funny. Ted Turner had a cup of coffee. He pitched in relief, didn't even start the game, pitched 1 1/3 innings, got shelled, had one at bat when he struck out. Not to be confused with the future Braves owner, Ted Turner, the magnate. So, so a few notable debuts first week.
Yeah, the standings as we wrap up this first week, are they looking like we expected or are they – I mean, the Red Sox are a surprise. What else are we seeing? Who's off to a hot start here?
All right, so we'll start with American League. So we have our very talented Chicago White Sox. Now, it's interesting here. I pulled this from the New York Times. This is so we're recording here April 24th, 2020. This is 100 years to the day. Baseball standings for Major League Baseball. So the New York Times actually lists by percentage points, not actually. So, when you think about baseball standings, if you've played more games, you might have a greater differential between wins and losses. And therefore you're actually technically in the lead. But in this, they actually list strictly by percentage points, which I thought was interesting. So the first team here, Chicago White Sox, like I just mentioned, they're 4-0. And they're ahead of Boston, and according to these standings, who are 6-1, like you mentioned, they off a hot start. And then we have Tris Speaker's Indians, who we talked a lot about last episode. They're 5-1. And then the Washington Nationals or Washington Senators are 3-3. The Yankees are off to a little bit of a slow start at 2-4. Then we have the St. Louis Browns, a perennial basement dweller, at 1-3. The Athletics, again, with all of their rookies, 1-4. And then the Tigers are off to a very bad start, 0-6.
Not to jump ahead too far, but it's going to be another week before the Tigers win a game, at least. Spoiler. They have
how things are going in Cobbland.
They have a really bad start to the season. I was spinning through their year, and they were yes, Ty Cobb was not happy. The opening weeks in Detroit were nothing in the win column. So it's going to be a little while till they even scratch one across. So they better get used to that last place position there in the American League.
Those poor Tigers. All right. So in the National League, we actually have a surprising two teams at the top because of all of our predictions and who we talked about and who we looked at. The Dodgers and the Pirates, two kind of underdogs, are at 5-2.
I don't think we've mentioned the Pirates once. I forgot that they even had a team. I got to look at the Pirates a little more for next week.
Yeah, we gotta make Pennsylvania proud. We apologize. Yeah,
especially they're off to a hot start, so yeah. That's good to hear. We'll look at the Pirates a little more.
And the Phillies, our beloved Phillies, are 4-3.
All right.
The Reds are also at 4-3. The Cardinals are even at 4-4. The Braves, the Boston Braves, 2-3. Chicago Cubs, 2-6. And then the Giants, surprisingly, at 1-4. So there's your standings for the first week, or at least through the 24th. So a little bit more than a week. But I was surprised at how well, teams like the Red Sox were doing, considering they got rid of Ruth.
Yeah, they found a way to get some wins. And I think next time, too, we'll talk about who is off to a hot start. We'll look at some of the individual stat leaders as well to see who's hitting the ball well. I know Speaker started out hot. I know Ruth was up and down the first month. I know Sisler hit all year. So there's a couple names that we'll look at once there's a few more games under our belt to see some of the individual performances. As a total side note, I've been watching, they've been showing on Fox Sports 1 This Week in Baseball from the 80s. Did I tell you that? They've actually been replaying them.
Oh, no, I had no idea. That sounds excellent.
On FS1, yeah. So there were some from the 70s and then some from the 80s. And, I was born in 76. So the ones from like 82, 83, 84, I remember watching those. So, I don't remember specifics, but watching those brings back such a memory. They were showing the one when it was a rain delay and the Orioles catcher, Rick Dempsey, put a pillow or whatever in his shirt and we did a head first dive, like slip and slide on the tarps in a rain delay. I don't know if you remember that. It was like when I was a kid, it was like the greatest thing. I thought it was so great. And then like several of the players were just like running around diving and splashing and sliding on the tarp during a rain delay. But Dempsey was the ringleader in that. So that was great to see. Saw some Reggie Jackson highlights. I just finished that book, 60 Feet, 6 Inches, where Reggie and Bob Gibson just talk for a couple hundred pages. And it's fascinating about the pitcher and, the battle between batter and pitcher, but also other, just other aspects of the game in their career. So that's just a couple other little baseball content for you. If you get a chance, check out that book. Check out This Week in Baseball from the OG, Mel Allen, 1980s. Those are pretty great. And
we're excited to let you know, as you probably already know, you might already know that we're live on iTunes and Spotify. So in addition to finding us at BAPL.org, we also are offering the podcast on those two services, which is pretty exciting.
And you can find us on Twitter at 1920s Baseball and ask us questions there. Give us corrections if there's other things we got wrong, which there probably were.
Yep.
And until next week, I guess we're going to call it a day. Off to an exciting start of the season and looking forward to catching up with you next week, Matthew, and see what the McGraw man and the others are up to.
Most definitely, Josh. Thank you.
All right. Signing off for this week in 1920s Baseball.
See ya.